this is a talk that I gave at 4 Days in May, which is a QRP convention, I guess, that's associated with the Dayton convention. And I was a little paranoid about running over. It's I have fewer time constraints here, but as long as I've got all my pacing things here on these pieces of paper here, I think I'll go ahead and use that. So you're going to get the same spiel that I gave in Dayton, which was aimed primarily at the QRP, very low power community. And specifically, I'm going to talk about, at least at first, a trip that I made to St. Thomas, where I participated in a contest with only 5 watts of power. And I'll describe what happened there. So I began, I said, hello, I am NE1RD. My name is Scott Anderson, and this is the 100-pound The Expedition QRP style. And for those of you who have suffered through this talk before, it's a different talk. It's almost a different talk every time I give it, because I learn a bunch of things in between, and I always revamp it. So,
go to new places, too.
And I go to new places. That's right. So this will be a little different than many QRP talks, which some of you may have heard, where they keep telling you what you need and how to build it. And this will be more along the lines of what do you have and how to get the most of it. So let's begin with some basics. Here's the general idea. Go someplace interesting. And by that, I don't necessarily mean expensive or dangerous. Bring some manageable amount of equipment. And concentrate on doing things simply and doing things correctly. So I wrote I had actually written a white paper for the conference, and I could make a version of it. That available. Actually, I've got a couple of white papers out. I talked about licensing and destination selections and other kinds of trade-offs. That's kind of nitty-gritty. If any of you are actually thinking about doing a trip, come find me, and I'm happy to give my 2 cents about how to best to get licensed and so on. But the key here on this slide is that planning makes or breaks your de-expedition. That if you should treat this like any kind of serious personal project that you've got, and if you do so, you'll have good results, at least I hope so. In olden days, like 4 years ago, airlines used to give you a couple of checked bags for free and carry-on for free and so on. Now they're practically selling you facial tissues, so. But this was the genesis of the 100-pound de-expedition. You used to be able to get 2 bags of 50 pounds each, 62 linear inches, that's length plus width plus height. Just like that brown that black pelican case right there. And so 2 bags, 50 pounds each, 100 pounds. You should be able to live within that budget, bring something with you that would be good enough on the other end. So you got to pay for those, but that's still the idea. Now, how many people here on HF? Okay, lots and lots, and your transceiver is almost, if you bought it from HRO or someplace similar, it's 100 watts, right?
Yeah.
Except for Allison, who knows better? QRP, as I said, is 5 watts. Thanks. Oh my goodness, all the way from 100, all the way down to 5. No one would ever hear me. Well, that's not the case. As it turns out, S units are enormous. And there's only about 2S units of difference between 100 watts and 5 watts. So if your buddy is off transmitting and talking to some faraway place at 100 watts and they say, hey, you're at S9 here, you get on with 5 watts, you should be S6, S7 right in there. Still plenty loud. So this is the big takeaway from the talk that I had down in Dayton, which is that, you know, we talk the talk about how 5 watts is only 2S units down. It's just 13 dB. So we should walk the walk and not be worried about it when we get on the air. So, rather than speak in abstract terms, what I'm going to do is I'm now going to describe my most recent trip. This, in this case, was to St. Thomas, the U.S. Virgin Islands. It's a very nice place. It was my consolation prize for needing to miss my St. Lucia trip because of work obligations. So, I went down for the CQ Worldwide WPX phone contest. It's a big suit there, but basically it's just a contest on HF, and I did about 200 QSOs using 100 watts just to kind of warm up and make sure everything was going to hold up, and then I operated in the contest QRP, that is only 5 watts. So let's walk through how to plan for one of these things. So the first thing is, and I've said this before in previous talks, you got to have good goals. Every trip's a planning exercise by setting goals and then measuring everything that I do against those. Sometimes the goals will change as I start making trade-offs and I see other opportunities, and it's really easy to make unattainable goals. And I did this actually on my St. Kitts trip in 2007, and I got all carried away and thought I could do much more than really was possible. So what you need to strive to have reasonable goals, and then let those be your guide when you're proceeding through the planning. So here were my goals for the trip. First of all, holy Toledo, I needed a vacation. So that was my first goal, is I'm going on vacation. Everything else was, you know, secondary to that. I wanted to bring a radio, but this was planned pretty much at the last minute. So I wanted to go someplace easy with no licensing issues. Okay, sometimes licensing can take up to a year or more. So I wanted to go someplace where I didn't have anything. That probably meant staying in the U.S. I like contesting. It's fun. There's all sorts of people on there. They want to talk to you, but not too much. And I wanted to get material for my FDIM talk, and it's fun for me to talk to you guys when I'm down there. It's a huge thrill when I hear a voice, you know, I hear Steve, or I hear Rich or somebody, you know. I mean, I like that. I'm hoping that, you know, you like it too. And as long as I'm going to be in the contest, you know, geez, you know, if I work really hard, could I set a record? So that was definitely a stretch goal, but, you know, put it on the list. All right, so first you need to think of some place to go. So we sort of decided on the U.S. Virgin Islands because, like I said, there's no licensing here. So I'll just be KP2 stroke NE1RD. And so let's use Google Earth to see if we can find some place nice. So here's St. Thomas. We traveled to the U.S. Virgin Islands once before in 2006, Sandy and I, and you'll see here in a minute. We went down to St. John, which is another of the U.S. Virgin Islands. It's just off to the screen was bigger, it'd be off to the right someplace. And but we landed on St. Thomas, right here, in fact. That's the little airport. And took a ferry over. So I learned a lot from that trip. Let's just look at that one before I show you what I did to what I did for this latest one. So here's a picture from that trip. Actually, that's it's not really scenic, but you get the idea of all those antennas up there. This was to St. John, again, it was 2006. And this was the first big trip of this sort for me. So I brought the kitchen sink with me. I brought all sorts of antennas. I had antennas for 80, 40, 20, and 15. And this was a flat roof on top of the guest house that was on this property. So I had this all to myself, and I filled just chock full of antennas here up on the roof. And I logged about 500 QSOs in the ARRLDX contest down there, and almost all of them were on 15 meters. Almost all. 15. Yes. Even when propagation in Europe is bad, lots of times north-south propagation is not so bad. So yeah, it was all in 15. Nice big band. It's one of my favorite bands. It's real big. So almost all these antennas did nothing for me. I mean, I had fun building them, they all work. I tried them out, you know, a little bit of pre-contest stuff, but 20 was so full, as a fellow Yankee Clipper Contest Club member said, it was like a knife fight in a phone booth. So I was happy to escape to 15 when I could. So, I mean, all my, you know, I built all these antennas, all that work, and basically the killer antenna was this 40-meter vertical that also doubled as 15. So I filed that little piece of information away. La, 15's really good. Okay. All right, so let's go back here. We fast forward 4 years. 3 years? 4 years, 2006, my goodness. And again, this is St. Thomas, and it's seen from Google Earth. Let's find a nice spot. Now, you see this peninsula up here, this nice big one right here? That's nice. Looks interesting. So that whole general area was a candidate. So I look around, see if I can find something on there. So we zoom in a little bit. And Google Earth, I don't know how many people here have used Google Earth. If you haven't, begin today. Like, it's not too early to go home tonight and start using it. You can get all sorts of great perspectives, zooming and panning and spinning and so on, to really get an understanding of the geography, even to a place that you've never been. So this push pin right here, it's part of the Google Earth interface. You can drop a push pin someplace. That's a house, a little pink roof. Looks like it's near the top of the hill, not quite at the top of the hill. Another property with a big pool, sort of down and to the right. It looks like it's more towards the top of the hill. So we note that. Okay, but this is interesting. So we zoom in a little bit more, and you can see the relief that this house is way above the ocean and much higher than the other houses around. Okay, so I'm starting to get really, really interested. Now, Google Earth resolution here is not so good, but that's okay. I get some good perspective here. I get some idea what the roof looks like. I can see the pool, areas around the pool. I should be able to spot this now and line it up and make sure that this is the one when I go look at advertisements for villas for rent. And in fact, this is the one. And it's a very nice place, but I can see that red pinkish roof there. I can see the pool, the area on either side of the pool. So this is probably the right place. You know, I mean, you have to make this connection between Google Earth and, you know, and the web here. So let's look again. You can see the roof and the pool and the two areas around the pool. Maybe that little road in the front of the property. All right, that's the place. So the photos on the right show a nice unobstructed view. In fact, we got about a 180-degree view of the ocean. We're sitting on the side of the hill, which is going to give us way above the ocean. In fact, GPS said about 80 feet above the ocean when I was down there and actually measured it. And we got a great 180-degree view with nothing in our way. Bad news, look at the position of the hill. So, all right, well, one of the things that I keep, my mantra is everything's a trade-off. I could bring more equipment, but then it would weigh more and I'd have to hustle it around. And so everything is going to be trade-off. In this case, look at this. I got a great shot west, U.S. and Hawaii, straight shot north over the pole to Japan, northeast goes to Europe. That looks clear east to Africa. I'm not sure I'd get all the way down to South Africa. There's probably another hill in the way, but you know, I can get the big bulk of it. And so this looks pretty good. The bad news is, well, that hill's in the way. I'm probably not going to work south, and that's too bad because South America's got all sorts of good QSOs I'm not going to get now, probably. But those other ones are great, so I decide that's okay, that's a good trade-off. So let's look again here, it's a pretty good property, location looks great. I'm going to tell you that, and I don't want you to feel sorry for me, but this was our second choice. That was our first choice. Okay, this property is called Stargate. It's at the end of that same peninsula. In fact, when we go back to the next map, you'll see the other pushpin, and it was lower, but by golly, there's really nothing in the way, and there's a chance I would have had a shot to South America had we gotten this one, but I'm not going to be unhappy. As you can see, this is Stargate way down here, then up the hill and, you know, along that ridge, there's Seabright, which is actually the one we needed at. Okay, it might have given me a chance in South America, but like I say, I'm not going to complain. Don't mind having to settle. Okay, so what is a WPX contest? What it stands for is, it's not a very good name, it's worked out prefixes. All they're trying to say is that everybody can work everybody. In contests, you're always collecting something. Countries, or zones, or states, or grids, that's right. In this case, you're collecting calls, you know, QSOs, and prefixes. So AA1, yes, AA1 is a prefix. KP2, stroke AD1RD, KP2 is the prefix. AB1HD, AB1 is the prefix. Each prefix is a multiplier. So what you try to do is you try to work all these stations that you can, and it's a 48-hour contest. Everybody can work everybody. I like those, as opposed to, say, the AWR-LDX contest, where people in the United States have to work people outside the United States. And people outside the United States can only work people in the United States, and so on. Here, everybody can work everybody. It means that as the propagation moves, you don't run out of people to talk to. You have new people to talk to, which is nice. All the QSOs have different points based on whether the other station is in a different continent, or the same continent, but a different country, or the same country, and so on. And all the prefixes are multipliers, so Cape Coutoo's a malt, W1's a malt, that sort of thing. So the score is the total number of points that you've accumulated by talking to people times the total number of multipliers. And that all sounds complicated, and you don't need to know how to do any of this math in order to submit your log. You submit your log, and you have computers on the other end to do all that. Your software that you use to logging, many logging programs will also give you some idea of, about where you are. You'll do the score computation, but the official one's done by the contest sponsor. All right. So it's actually becoming a kind of a popular contest. Now, I was licensed in 2002, and so there were, I don't know, just over a couple thousand people playing in this contest then. Last year, it was up to almost 4,100. This year, there were 4,500 logs submitted electronically, and that doesn't count any of the people who sent their paper logs in, and I'm not even sure we were at the log deadline. So it went up quite a bit. It's a very popular contest. What that means is there's lots of people on the air to talk to. Okay, so it's that makes it fun. I look for this to be even more popular as time goes on. First of all, it is a really fun contest, but as the sunspots start coming back, when you have a contest where you can work everybody, that's a good deal. So one of the things I said, well, let's try to set a record. Okay, first of all, that sounds really arrogant when you start out, but I realized pretty quickly that I looked up on the WPX website that CQ Magazine maintains, because they're the contest sponsor, and there was no record for any single band QRP entry, so by making a single contact, I could be a winner. That's a note in here right now. She said, that's cheating. No, no, no.
But I like it.
That's called research. That's different. So I'm thinking, yeah, well, now remember on St. John, I did all those 15-meter contacts? Well, okay, so I'll try to set the 15-meter record. All right. So I'll try to make a contact. Then I'll be in the record book, and I'll be a happy guy. All right. Now, like I said, remember back on St. John, I set up all those antennas and then made almost all my contacts on 15 meters. All right, well, for this contest, I'm only working 15 meters. Single band. I did do a few QSOs on 17 and 20 meters, mostly talking back here to Westford, Jumpsford, that sort of thing. But the contest was all single band 15 meters. And this is the antenna I used. It's a two-element 15-meter Yagi, full size, with an 8-foot beam, and it's all constructed from buddy pole parts. Okay, see those two bags at my feet with the little arrows there? That whole antenna system, that's the tripod, the 8-foot mast, the boom, 8-foot boom, the elements, all that stuff and more fit into those two little bags. It's way under 15 pounds. Actually, there's extra pieces, parts in there, spares. And I don't know if you can see that. Here's a big rock. Okay, that I just pulled off the property, and that's a bungee on there, and that's holding that tripod down in a way that, you know, it's going to take something pretty serious to knock it over. And I've also got a guide. You may even be able to see that. So that's the antenna. If you're going to be in a single band, you only need one antenna. Now, I love this picture. I really do, because it basically tells the whole story of the trip. Get a property with a great location. That's a nice view. Bring the best materials you can that can live within your weight and size budget. Don't try to do everything, just single band, only going to do one thing, but try to do some very small number of things and try to do them well. And in this case, I'm going to try to kick some butt on 15. So these are the components that actually go into that antenna. This is called a Versa-T. It can screw onto the end of the onto the end of the boom to be the driven element, or it can be the center for a dipole. Something else, this tripod. This little wizzo here is called an IT adapter, which allows you just, all of these things have 3/8 by 24 threading, so they all mate with each other, and actually anything standard for 3/8 by 24.
That?
Pardon me?
It's the like erector set for it.
Yeah, it's like erector sets, okay? It all fits together. I mean, it's the same threading that's on the bottom of a hamstick, or on an MFJ whip or anything else like that. Now, this isn't the only way to get a lightweight Yagi down there. Of course, here's a two-element Mosley tri-bander that I used on St. Kitts, special event station around here, that sort of thing. It's also a very, very nice antenna. It's got three bands. I had to order from the factory, though, because typically antennas like these are cut into 6-foot parts, so they'll ship UPS. UPS won't ship anything longer than 6-foot without whining about it. So they normally cut these things into 6-foot pieces. I need it to be in 4-foot pieces, 48 inches, so that these pieces would fit into a hard-sided golf bag. So here's the specs on this. 10 meters, it's just a 2-element. So they're all 2-elements. 5.1 dBd, that's dB over a dipole. So add about 3 to get dBi, so we can compare this to the one I don't. 15 meters, that would put us at about 7.5 dBi and so on. About 17 dB front-to-back ratio. It's only got a 6-foot boom length, so that explains why we're not getting much better front-to-back. Assembled weight's about 8 pounds, but that doesn't count the boom to mast, or the mast, or something pulled up, or anything else. So here's the golf bag I was talking about. At some point, if you're not careful, and this is on my St. Kitts thing, where I said, hey, I just got all sorts of ideas, and then it just went way overweight. It started feeling less like a de-expedition and more like an exercise program. So you can see why I prefer to leave the golf bag at home. I mean, it's big and it's clunky and so on, but in there is a whole bunch of coax and the Mosley tri-bander and a bunch of other stuff, including buddy poles, as it turns out. So if you want, and there she is, my co-conspirator, unindicted, and if you want to take more and you have somebody going with you, you know, it could be, you set your own thing. I said 100 pounds, 100 pounds per person. Two people, 200 pounds, right? Well, we shouldn't bring that much stuff. You can bring a golf bag. The airlines, even now, will allow you to bring a golf bag which is larger than those dimensions I mentioned, 62 linear inches, and they will usually not blink if it's less than 70 pounds, not 50. You know, you have to want to bring that much stuff.
Clubs are heavy.
Yes, yes they are. Trade-off time. Okay, antenna's heavier by the time you figure out how to get a mast, everything else like that. It's also a lot more clumsy. You got to bring it in the bag. Okay, but I get three bags. I got three bands, I beg your pardon. 10, 15, and 20. And now I only need one run of coax. So there's a trade-off. Coax is about 4 pounds per 100 foot for RG8X. Or if you were bringing RG8, that's about 8 pounds per 100 foot. So, you know, geez, two runs is 16 pounds. Starting to sound like something serious here. The 4-foot pieces, though, they require that you bring a hard-sided golf bag, which also weighs, you have to count that weight too. The short boom is a little shorter than the single-band monobander that I could put together, but sure, all this stuff beats a dipole, or a vertical, usually. Requires a mast system. I could bring it with me, but it would be heavy. I could buy it down there, but then I'd probably have to leave it. Maybe it'd be cheaper to actually buy it and throw it away than to pay the airline to ship it. All these are trade-offs. The last one is it's a little more tedious to set up. Hey, I've only got so many hours on Paradise. Do I want to spend it building antennas, or would I like to build it kind of quickly and get on the air, or have a steak? You know, one of those things. So it's all the trade-offs. Here's what that antenna looks like. Boom's made of those antenna arms that I pointed out earlier. They're about 22 inches long and have 3/8 by 24 threading, one male and one female on each side. So there's two of them here. One of those IT adapters that threads things together. One, two of them here. There's 8 feet, almost. We put that VersaT on the front. That's the driven element. Coax goes down here, and then that's the reflector. The driven element reflector also made of buddy pole parts. Those arms and 9.5-foot whips. It only took me about 15 minutes to put this thing together. Threw the analyzer on there, and a little hard to see, but this is a Smith chart. It'll be a quiz later. Reading Smith charts. In this case, it's really easy. This line right down the middle, that's the pure resistance line, and that little tiny green stripe right there. I'll zoom in a little bit.
It's terrible.
All across the band, that's where it landed. Now, when you stop and think about, I'm sorry, was there a question? Okay. When you stop and think about it, I'm about 80 feet up off sea level. I'm away from just about everything else. This thing looks like it's hanging in free space if you were to model it. That's because it almost was hanging in free space. So I'm not surprised that I get that. So there's nothing I can do with this. You know, I don't need to put hairpin matches or anything on there. It's all pure resistance. And plenty close enough that my IC7000 is not going to whine at me. So this is what the far field pattern for this thing looks like. I can never read these things, although, you know, if I squint, I guess I get some idea where the gain bulge is based on the height. I actually prefer looking at individual slices. So it's about 7.5 dBi at 20 degrees. And if you remember the Mosley, he was about that. So that's not too bad. And it's got about 14 dB of front to back, so it's not quite as good as the Mosley. That's all right. At 30 degrees, which normally on a de-expedition, you don't really want to be thinking about stuff that high, but I was close enough to the US, and maybe that wouldn't be so bad. And I actually picked up almost 9 dB, over 9 dB at that. So it's a pretty good pickup over a dipole. Pardon me?
Very good.
Beats a dipole.
It definitely beats a dipole. Exactly. Again, this is the antenna, the mast, the tripod, all fit in those two little bags with all sorts of extra pieces to boot. So that's a net in those two little bags, slip in my check bag. With plenty of room left.
How much does the antenna weigh?
About. Probably just the antenna and not the tripod and mast?
No, just the antenna.
Just the antenna. Minus 4, 8. Probably about 8 pounds.
Oh.
Maybe 7. Something like that. Not much. Not much. It's just lightweight. It's all lightweight aluminum. So it's pretty light. Okay, once you got the station set up, it's time to operate. So here's, I strongly recommend using computer logging if you go on a de-expedition. I mean, if there's all sorts of reasons, just do it. They'll all become obvious. This is my world when I'm operating. Windows are like from top to bottom. This is my data entry window. Here's a list of people I've worked. Is anybody on there looks familiar from here? No? Okay. There's some setup data here, it's sort of hidden. Normally I'd worry about having the machine hooked up to the radio, so I'd track band changes, but I don't have band changes, so I didn't even bother. Super check partial database, I'll explain that in a second. And this is, as I type somebody's call in, the QRZ will pop up. Actually, I could run that here. That's interesting. This will show me previous QSOs with that person, so I can make sure that I don't dupe them on purpose. SuperCheck Partial, there's actually a database of known contesters. So when it's noisy and you can't quite hear and you're listening, you get some of the call in there and you know you're just looking for like those last two letters, a list of the usual suspects go up there and help me pick a call sign that's incorrect so I can log in.
What software is this?
This is my software actually. Yeah. So mostly this is my this is what my little narrow view looks like. When I'm not glancing over to make sure I'm not duping somebody, and if I'm calling CQ, I don't even bother with the dupes. Just log them in a contest. Contest sponsor doesn't mind if you work people twice; they only give you credit once. But it's better to work them twice than to, not at all. So I just enter the call sign. It's 5-9, never changes. What you call, what you signal. Yeah, you're 5-9. And I just type in their serial number. This is the one I'm sending. I say log it. Actually, there's a magic three-finger key combination where I just type in and kaboom, next. Side on the other side is the real-time score computation. So as I log people, I've got a ginormous database behind all this. It knows where everybody lives, knows what continent they are based on their prefix, country based on their prefix, and so on. So how many points are worth, and so on. It keeps track of all the vaults and the points, and of course, we've only got I got zero ERCs up 15 meters here. I've got 154 QSOs for 365 points and 124 MULTs at the time I took the picture. I guess the end of the day, it's Saturday. I'm not sure.
Hey, Scott, speaking of multipliers, operating horrible, what prefix did you?
Oh, I was Kilo Papa 2 stroke November Echo 1 Radio Delta.
I understand. So what did you count as?
Oh, I was a KP2.
KP2. So could you go and operate a little bit later as NP2?
No. I don't. I was only going to be one thing in the contest. I'm not sure what the rules are on that. So this is the end of the first day. This is a graph of the activity with little paints, little lines up here at 15 minute intervals. This is Friday night. It starts at 00 Zulu, which is about 8 o'clock in the evening our time, right? Or even on St. Thomas. So I work a little bit Friday night, just searching pounds. I just start went into the band, work up. Hear somebody having work. Anybody starting Friday night, start working them. I call them, they call CQ, I call them, they give me an exchange, I give one back, we both log in. A little bit like that, and I can hear people. Out of my first 10 contacts, 3 were to Hawaii. Okay, so I think I'm going to have some fun here. I like this a lot. So band finally, you know, band closed up. I pointed over the pole. I worked, I think, a Japanese station and got his call wrong, but I logged it, very nice. And then I went to bed. And I got a nice, all these little tick marks here, which may or may not be visible from where you're sitting, are ours. So, yeah, so all blank. That's me getting a good night's sleep. Getting ready for the next day. All right. And the next day I got up and I called CQ. Now, I did it just like a big station would do. You know, I found an empty spot in the band and I started calling CQ. Well, actually, my voice gear, my SC7000 saved my voice. It did most of the talking. But I hear and read crazy things about operating QRP, you know, and advice given by very well-meaning people trying to be helpful, saying, don't try to call CQ, they'll never hear you. Well, it's just crazy. It's crazy. It's just two S units, remember? You know, and so a 5-watt QRP signal is only down about two S units from somebody who's got a 100-watt signal. It's just not that big a difference. You know, if you can find an empty spot in advance, start calling CQ. Now, this is the reason why people get all bent out of shape. This is as good a time as any to bring up this point. These S meters are just pure evil. They just really are. Now, how many times have you finished, and this is, I'm talking to a group of 200 people who build radios like crazy. I said, how many of you have finished a homebrew rig, looked at it and said, you know what this needs? Like these rock bars we built. You know what it needs? It needs an S meter. Of course it doesn't.
It's annoying.
It's just annoying. Of course not. It's one of my favorite cartoons. On the internet, nobody knows you're a dog. In contest, nobody knows you're QRP because you're too busy trying to get stations in the log and score points. You're not obsessing about this stupid S meter. They hear you, they work you. Okay, back to the story. I called CQ, which for some people would be scandalous. With 5 watts. Certainly all that's right. Certainly all the people who spent a lot of money on amplifiers. And I started racking up a nice log full of QSOs. And, you know, the key to a good de-expedition or contest operation is, and this is the big secret, keep your butt in the chair. Honestly, just keep at it. Stay focused. Keep going. Keep logging. I did this all day on Saturday. Stay there. Stay on target. Now, I'm not working them all that fast. About 15 hours, which means more than about 1 minute. Of course, they'll come in clumps. They'll come in clumps because lots of people will... when I get a clump, I know what happened. Somebody spotted me. Put me in the spotting network, and there's lots of people who have lost the ability to turn the knob when the computer tells them to do so. So I would get a whole bunch of people from the spotting network, and then it'd be dead again. Now, the thing is that when you're sitting there, pushing a button, seek your contest. This is the Kilo Papa 2-stroke November Echo 1 Radio Delta. Seek your contest, anybody for a call. That's what was on my voice gear. Over and over. Push the button. Push the button. Do that. You know, and you just every minute or so, just about the time I thought band's dried up. Oh God, band's dried up. Oh, somebody had come. Okay, I quick work down and log them. Everybody behind? Nope. Secret content. Okay. And you start getting worried. Oh, band's gonna dry. And you're bored. Oh, that, you know. I mean, it'd be fun to have more people coming a little faster. So I'm surfing the web. A nice internet access. And I noticed that by the end of the day Saturday, you know, hey, I'm doing pretty well. Also my software, so I'm still with my software here, nice pretty pictures. I put about 345 contacts in the log. Okay, most were to North America. Yeah, I figured that. A few to Europe, other places. I can see 4 QSOs to OC on this line right here. Those are up to Hawaii. Good start. I vow to get a bunch more in Europe early in the morning. Make sure I get the main point to Europe. And, you know, when the Europeans dry up, then I'll swing it back. Good time as any to remind you that, remember all that fun I talked about with the Yagi? Okay, that's the good news. Get some gain. The bad news is you get deafness in the other directions. So you gotta think about where you want to point it. You point it in the wrong direction, you might miss somebody important. So you need to think about and plan ahead, and I had, of what I was going to do. You know, you walk in with a plan, and the plan was early in the morning, point to Europe. As soon as it seems like 15 meters is likely going to be alive on middle of the country west, North America, I'll swing it, but not until I've washed all the Europeans out. I'll be able to work North Americans almost any time. Europeans are going to dry up as soon as the sun goes down over there, so I point over there. When I'm done, work on all the Euro trash, swing it all the way over west, and I try to work as many people west as I can. Now, not till the very end of the day, when I think I've just about washed off all the people on the west, do I swing it north. Or the pole, hoping to pick up some Japanese stations. I can't swing it south, there's a hill there. Otherwise I'd try to do that, try to get South Africa, or maybe go around the other way and see if I can pick up ZLs or VKs. So I'm only pointing it north late in the day. I had some people from New England call me. I'm calling CQ, so they're calling me. And I come back, Yankee Lipper Confidence Club meeting, and they went, "Okay, you are weak. My beam's not pointing at you. Why are you calling me?" Loud enough that it would not look loud enough with 5 watts off the side of the beam, you called me.
It's terrible when that happens.
So I'm sitting here and I'm getting just, you know, now I've read all the news. I'm definitely all caught up on world events. I read everything you can read on the internet at 45-second intervals while I'm working people about 1 minute, and I start thinking, I wonder what the North American record is, because my score is getting pretty high. So, you know, after the good night's sleep, I'm calling Europe, and I'm thinking, you know, I need to start looking around. I looked up on the CQ Worldwide site. Now, remember, this is not the record for Virgin Islands. This is the North American record. Virgin Islands didn't have a record. So the record for the North America stations was set all the way back in 1985, and it's just over 500,000 points. I'm looking at my score and going, whoa, I could do this. I might break the North American record. So now my butt is glued to the seat. Absolutely glued. And I'm making them. And I'm thinking, I'm looking at the clock, and I'm looking at the QSO count, and I'm looking at the multiplier count, and I'm looking at the score, and I keep calling CQ. I still have an open frequency. I'm still calling CQ. I called CQ all day Sunday. The rate's about 1 a minute, lots of times between QSOs. So I start looking up the world record. Okay. Well, I'm doing pretty well, but I'm looking at that top score in the world record. I can make that. Hey, look. Russian. And then this guy. I'll beat that guy. Top five at least. You know, I don't know what's going on in Russia, but I don't know if I'm going to beat any of those, but this one, I got my eye on this one. Okay? This would be the top five in the world ever for this band mode. For this contest, you know, but it's a small pond. I still want to be a big frog. So here we are at the end of the contest. You can see the areas under the curve is how many QSOs I made and when I made them. Big spike here. I don't remember why. Often in these contests, on Sunday afternoon, people who had been busy all weekend will come on because they know that they're fresh meat. And everyone will want to talk to them because nobody else has them in the blog yet. So often Sunday afternoon is your busiest time. That's why I was getting really excited because I thought, ha-ha, the fresh meat has not arrived yet. So here you can see near the end of the contest, I peaked over 100 QSOs an hour, at least for some 15-minute period now. Funny thing is, you know, the big stations, the guys that are running 1,500 watts or more, they got, you know, serious contest stations, you know, they do rates of 350. So I'm still, you know, this is a joke to them. And I'm looking at this and going, holy Toledo. In about 25 hours of operations, I had 809 log entries. The max rate of 128. Based on some window here. It's not too bad. Let's see what that ends up with. See what we got. Well, here it's breakdown by continent. 664 to North America, 7 to South America. But we knew that, because our planning had predicted South America was going to be really, really tough. That's probably just backscattered. 116 to EU, I did pick up some more. Okay, that's good. I got about 5, so I only picked about one more Hawaiian station, I think. I got about 10 to Africa and 6 to Asia. I think those were all Japanese stations. And I think I fat-fingered one of them. Okay, so most of this is to the US and Canada, but still, there's plenty of prefixes to go for that. After duplicates were removed, it's funny because I went quick, ran up and down the band late in the contest to make sure I had all the other people calling CQ, because one of us needs to go search and pounce. So I did that, and I came back, and I called CQ, and sure enough, one of the people I'd searched and pounced came back and called me. They're not even looking at the dupes thing anymore. They're just going fast. Okay. After 48 hours of being up, they're all drunk as sailors. 794 QSOs, 391 prefixes for 676,000 claimed points. Way above that 500 and something. Now, I know I goofed some up. In fact, the call sign didn't copy the serial number right. I don't know what my final score will be, and I won't know until January of next year when the official results comes out. But I'm liking it. You don't need to be this maniacal. In fact, I wouldn't recommend it. My first time doing this, and for those of you who have suffered through this talk before, was in Hawaii in 2005. I built a K2, brought it with me, and just worked all over the Pacific from the balcony, top floor of the hotel. Sandy's reading her book. I'm working ZLs with 5 watts. The only thing I tell you is don't tell people what your power level is until you've got your signal report so you don't pick up the QRP discount. Find a nice, comfortable place to sit. Remember I said, butt in the chair. If your butt's in an uncomfortable chair, it won't want to stay there. So get yourself a nice, comfortable operating position. I should have pointed out when I first did it, but radio so that you know you can rest your arm and turn the knob. Computer's in a nice, comfortable position. If anything, it should have been a little higher, but that's the problem with laptops. But everything's a nice, convenient, got room to set a nice, cold drink if you want. It should be fun. If you're sitting in an uncomfortable position, it won't be. Neither do you need to fly there. Here's the very first K1P special event, which is now owned by this club, at least the whole notion of it. This is my friend Dave and I in Deer Isle, Maine. We just checked our car full of stuff and drove up there. When I gave this slide in 4 days in May, I said this is a C3SS tri-bander. It weighs over 30 pounds, something like 32 pounds, but even this, if you are careful, could go on a de-expedition in the Gulf case. That was actually its original intent. It did not arrive in time for the 2006 de-expedition. I said, it's a monster of an antenna. Oh my goodness, it performs magnificently. But it's heavy, okay? And it's like imagine a 30-pound turkey on the end of a stick, okay? Because that's about what we've got going here. That's a military mast, and I was nervous putting that thing up. I know that military mast is pretty strong. But, you know, if you're careful, and I used to have a slide in this presentation that showed somebody had built one of these things and had one of these magnificent balconies where nothing but seawater below, you know, 100 feet below, kind of like the view I had, and they just had it stuck on the end of the balcony. And you know what? You know,
it got wet.
He was way up above the sea, so it was, you know, the mast system was probably a 5-pound piece of pipe. It was just lashed to the deck, you know? That's the trade-off he made. It was a great one. The guy from, this is a Force 12 antenna. Force 12 antennas has a new owner. He came and he tracked me down afterwards. He goes, yes, the C3SS weighs 32 pounds, but the C3S, not SS, but S, that only weighs 26 pounds, and we can cut that to you 48 days. Just give me a sales pitch. You want to make sure I got the numbers right. I said, well, look, I'm giving this talk again. Make sure I got the weights right. So this is a C3SS. It's got linear loading, and the other one has full-size elements, which the man says he will make sure will fit in your golf bag for you, and it weighs 6 fewer pounds. Planning includes practice. So here's Dave and I. We are practicing putting this antenna together so we don't get up to Deer Isle, Maine and discover we're either short of heart or don't know what we're doing. Okay, if we're going to find out we don't know what we're doing, we'd rather do it at home. And so we put the whole thing together, and then we carefully marked everything, and we taped it all back up and as we took it apart so that when we got up to Maine, it would go back together again, and we knew it would. Practice. And I mean everything. Here's a collection of stuff. I weigh everything. And I know what it weighs individually, I know what it weighs in the small clumps, I know what it weighs in bigger clumps, and I know what it weighs when it goes in the bag. The only way to make decent trade-offs is to get all the data. You don't need to go far away. Boston Harbor Islands are, just get out of Boston, hop on one of the ferries, it's really fun. They're tons of fun. I will be out on the Boston Harbor Islands in July for the RSGB IOTA contest. And so the Radio Society of Great Britain has a great program anyway with the IOTA program, Islands on the Air. They've got a contest, and it's also Scads of Fun, and I'm going to be on the island. This is what it looked like the last time I was out there. Me camping. I mean, anybody, see, nobody's snickering. Nobody really knows me well here. My idea of camping is a hotel room without cable.
No, that's roughly.
You know, so I mean, being a tent, a sleeping bag, and stuff. If I, my, you know, people who knew me well, they'd be on the floor rolling around, laughing. I've got some new stuff, but it all needs to get shaken out. I'm going to be doing that probably field day by myself, so I can do the dry run on this. I've got some new lithium iron nanophosphate batteries, and some other stuff. But it's only 24 hours. I go out there on Saturday morning, operate the contest for 12 hours, sleep, and then get back in the ferry. So I do it the way I, you know, did stuff like this when I was 13. I pack a bunch of peanut butter and jelly sandwiches and all the water I can carry. Okay, almost done here. Your event isn't done unless the paperwork's done. So plan ahead for the QSLing effort. We were careful to get a nice picture. This is what the actual QSL card looks like. Has anybody got one of those for me yet here? Should have brought some. I will next time. I wanted the expedition. Many people are going to want your card, you know, if you make a big deal out of it. They either want it as a souvenir or they want to use it as credit towards an award or something. So, you know, don't be a stinker. You know, make sure you've got a nice card. Make sure that you answer your QSL request promptly. Use the electronic services. I don't know how many people here are signed up for Logbook of the World. Okay, yeah, more of you need to be. If you're making an HF contest, please be on Logbook of the World. It is free. It's tedious to get started, but it is free.
It's a royal pain.
It's a royal pain to get started, but once you are, then it's all free. EQSL is another service, and also free. You can toss the guy a couple of bucks. He would appreciate it. Make sure that people have your. Make sure that people know how to get QSL cards from you. Turn around the quest quickly and expect to see some shortwave listening cards. How many people here have ever received a shortwave listening card?
Yeah.
Okay. It isn't just that people are interested and enthusiastic and have it as a hobby. There are some countries that make you collect QSL cards from shortwave listening to show that you've got enough. You know, that you've got sufficient interest and ability to jump through hoops, apparently. They won't give you your license unless you've done this for like a year. And you need to get, they can't get licensed unless you help them by sending them your QSL card. So if you don't turn around anything quickly, at least turn around those things quickly, because you might be holding up somebody's license. Interestingly, people would like to see if they're in your log. And there's a really nice, there's a bunch of services out there, but again, free. The price is right here. This one's called Club Log. I've uploaded all of my logs to Club Log. And you can type in, you can say search log KP281RD. When you got going on this thing, you can type in your call sign here, and it'll tell you all the QSOs that you've got. There's even a place here for making an online QSL request, that sort of thing. So this is, again, it's free, and people would like to be able to make sure that you're in the log. EQSL, how many people here on EQSL? More, good. Not tedious to get started, very easy. And if you've gone through the tedium, this is interesting, if you've gone through the tedium of setting up your Logbook of the World account, attaining this, the authenticity guarantee, the thing that EQSL has that gives them that warm fuzzy that it's really you, you can do it any number of ways. You can fax them your license, you can do this. But if you have a Logbook of the World account, and it has at least one QSO in it, you can push a button on the EQSL site. It will go over to the Logbook of the World site behind the scenes, see if it can go query for you over there. If it finds you, it comes back and says, okay, you're good to go. Getting this authenticity guarantee thing can be done in literally 12 seconds. Very easy. And without this, your QSOs don't count for awards for the people who work here. So it's very important that you get this. CQ Magazine's awards and some EQSL awards are all done through this service. By getting this, your QSOs will go towards their efforts. That's what Logbook of the World looks like. For those of you who haven't seen it, they say, you know, it is tedious. But don't be a sourpuss. You know, figure out how to get it.
I've gotten it going, I made an OS change and lost it.
The League is very familiar with that sort of problem, and you know, they'll help you work through it.
I finally gave up.
Okay. So, when I went to Montserrat, which is another trip that didn't talk about it right here, our motto was not rare, but well done. And that's, I hope that all any of you who try this will try to do that. It doesn't have to go to a rare place. You don't need to go to, you know, Antarctica or someplace dangerous or anything else like that. Just go out to the Boston Harbor Islands, throw up an anton, and just try to do it well and make sure you QSL when you're done and so on.
Funny thing is, I've gone up to Knobscot Hill, which is about 2 miles from where I live, as the crow flies. Gone up there and had people go nuts over me that even knew it was 2 miles from where I live.
It's just fun, you know? All right, so that's QSL cards. That is the presentation. It all had to fit, I think, in about 50 minutes there. I probably slowed down a little bit here and threw in some extra stuff. But I'm going to get the lights.
And I will take any questions. So, I'll take a few questions. It's getting late.
I know.
Well, just a curiosity, the longer elements on your beam, those are the bungee cord elements?
Nope.
They're the telescoping wood?
The way that this works is, on the rear, on the front, 1/22-inch arm, 1 9.5-foot whip, not quite all the way pulled out. Reflector, 1/22-inch arm, 1 11-inch arm, 9.5-foot whip. And then tuned to
the top. I didn't know if you'd try out using the shock cord.
The shock cord whips? I have them, I didn't even bring them. Yes?
But you guys know a lot more about antennas than me. You did that chart, and you showed how there was a little bit more gain at 30 degrees than was at 20 degrees.
That's right.
As a matter of fact, it was almost a 2 dB that you're losing by going through. Okay. Couldn't you take your antenna there and tilt it down 10 degrees?
I'm not sure that was, yeah. It has more to do with the effects of ground. Yes.
I know, but yeah. You said you're almost in free space like that.
Almost.
I was wondering the opposite.
Yeah.
Tilt it up and aim it and warm the clouds over South America. You're not so far from it.
The problem is that at 21 megahertz, you know,
that's, you don't warm clouds.
Yeah. the next stop is Mars.
Okay.
I'm sorry, go ahead. Okay, anybody else? Rich.
Is it safe to assume you chose the 7000 over the 703 plus for the voice gear?
For the voice gear, otherwise it would have been hoarse by, yeah, imagine, you know, twice a minute. I'm saying that same thing over and over. And I've done contests, you know, at home without the voice gear. And
I cheat on 6 and 2, you know, coming up beat VHF USL in June. The way I've done it is I just set up the old Heath memo key over and run it CW. You know, I don't have the voice keyer, but I'm not going to wear my voice out.
I used to have an external MFJ voice keyer. I just sold it because the 7000 works so well. It's a fine QRP when you turn it all the way down. If you've noticed on the, I did have a little watt meter on top, so I can tell when it's about 5 watts. That was a MFJ, actually it was a bad MFJ tuner. And I sold that also. I bought a nice regular watt meter now. Another question?
So have we done the a week, a month, 2 weeks?
Yeah,
we done this.
See, I was
not long enough.
Not, yeah, that's exactly right. I was down there for 7 days. So I arrived on Wednesday, I think, and left on Tuesday.
What's the villa cost for that?
That depends. If it's in season or out of season, when I went down to St. Kitts, it was out of season. It was hurricane season. We had that problem. It could be half of what the normal rate is. This was in season, so the rate was about $4,000. It sounds like a lot. But if you go down to the Caribbean and you rent a hotel room, and then you go out to eat every night, it's really expensive. We went to the grocery store, you know, and I made hamburgers and spaghetti and all the stuff that was, you know, we ate well, but we ate pretty cheap. But, you know, we saved at least $1,000 on food, I'm sure. And, you know, so, again, it's all trade-offs. I was willing to cook and have a nicer place to operate from.
When you did the airport, experience going through the airport, did you get any TSA questions on your equipment? Any hiccups with them on your equipment?
Yeah, TSA is... TSA. Terribly stupid authority. Okay. Check bags I never get any problems with. I can always see that they've opened it up and they've rifled through it and they've left a note in there that says TSA has visited your bag. Carry on. I've got my netbook that I brought with me. Two of these lithium iron nanophosphate brick batteries in my carry on. Okay. With the big harness coming out of it, a whole bunch of little wires that she's got. They scared me. And I got a bunch of other stuff in there. Roll it through. I go through the x-ray machine. And I wait for it. And they roll it back. They roll it through. Sir? Yes? You need to take the netbook out of the case.
We are doomed. Just doomed.
I thought you weren't supposed to take rechargeable lithium batteries.
You cannot, important safety tip, Egon, you cannot check batteries. You must carry them on. The thought is that if there was going to be a problem, battery fire or something, it would be better to have it accessible by you or someone in the cabin to be able to extinguish it or at least to cut it off. Then they have it be in the hold buried under 20 other bags. So you must bring them on and not check them. In fact, if you do check them, you will get called and you will have to come get them. So yeah, lithium ion, and these are like the batteries in the Prius. This new battery technology, A123 in the new Prius. Yes. And there's a lot of energy in these batteries. But if they had any idea how much energy is in the batteries in the laptops, they didn't let us on there. He put those either.
I just saw a news item today from Apple Manufacturing Association. The transportation of lithium ion is under review now. They may well start moving.
That's interesting. Okay, I actually brought the material data sheets with me for the batteries. And the batteries
are... What's
the
idea?
And the material data sheets show that they are risk-free, basically. The batteries that I have, I bought them from Buddy Pole Inc., and they have resettable fuses in them. There's really no reason to be all that worried about them. But there is a lot of energy packed.
Actually, the aviation and lithium batteries goes back a long time.
Eh? Sure.
Probably about almost 30 years when ELTs were powered by them, and they had some very bad situations with ELT battery failures and ELTs, not gas and fires, but not. And they actually made old ELT owners, pull the damn batteries out, find an alternate TSO approved battery in manganese alkaline.
Yeah,
what a pain.
For those of you who are not pilots or grew up with pilots, ELT is emergency locator transmitter box, and mostly what they're used for is to turn on inside someone's hangar and then have somebody with a very stern look on his face come and turn it off for you.
But they won't let you fly without it.
And TSO is technical standard order, which is the way that the FAA has standard parts approved, so that not everybody who builds a bolt needs to be able, you know, has to go through the certification process. I'm going to take maybe one more question before Andy throws me off. Yes, sir?
Just a comment. If you're looking for some place to operate, often states like Rhode Island and Vermont are rare parts of this country. Very sweepstakes, things like that. Those two states are very rare.
Actually, I did not work a single North Dakota station, and that was a lament for the guy who had done the contesting talk even before me. So we all agreed that somebody needs to go to North Dakota.
Yeah.
20 volunteers.
North Dakota.
All right, you guys have been very patient. I appreciate it. Thank you very much.